This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Today's episode of Real Talk with Zuby is brought to you by our sponsors, OZ Lifestyle Brands. OZ Lifestyle Brands care a lot about the details. Their selection of men's accessories balance style with substance and quality and craftsmanship, showcasing both casual and classic designs. They also make shopping really easy for you. You can just go check out their website, ozlifestylebrands.com. They've got a fantastic selection of watches, wallets, t-shirts, and other accessories, especially designed for men with ultra-discerning tastes. OZ is for men who have found their calling but don't feel the need to shout about it. So I recommend you go check out their full range of products over at ozlifestylebrands.com. To let them know that I sent you and to get 20% off your entire first order, just use the code ZUBYMUSIC at checkout. That is ZUBYMUSIC, Z-U-B-Y music, at checkout to get 20% off your entire order at ozlifestylebrands.com. ozlifestylebrands.com. Go check them out.
Sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's show, we have got the founder and owner of a new coffee company, which is called Ground Shark Coffee. This is Nick Lowry. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Zuby, how you doing, man? Glad to be here.
Awesome, man. Glad to have you here. So I've done a very, very brief intro right there, but why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what it is that you do?
Yeah. So long story short, I, like you said, owner, founder of Ground Shark Coffee. My business partner does all the roasting, all the coffee, all the product development, everything in that nature. That's his realm. I do the business side and the sales side. We started up back in August. I think our first live day was August 18th because it was 8/18/18. And since then, we've just been moving slowly, building and building and building. And actually, just like 2 weeks ago, we became profitable. So that was a really good feeling.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. So what on earth led you to starting a coffee company? Because that's not the thing an average young man does.
Dude, we just thought it'd be fun. Yeah. It was literally that simple. So my business partner, he's like in his mid-30s, and he's got a culinary arts degree, and he's used that to basically make his way. He worked at Whole Foods for a while. He worked at or I guess that was a big one, but a lot of his like freelance work over the past couple of years has been as a personal chef. So a lot of them have just been like for events and stuff like that. And then like if you've got a wife or a girlfriend and you want to have a really romantic dinner for Valentine's Day, but you don't want to cook, or you want to have a chef come and prepare you like an amazing meal, that's his gig. So Okay. Yeah, for kind of whatever you want, to an extent, he'll come and make it happen. And, we were sitting down to grab lunch one day, cause he posted on his Facebook that he had quit his job about a year before and had been stressed and never really knew if ends were going to meet, but he was the happiest and most fulfilled he'd ever been, cause he was finally going in on like what he was passionate about. Mm-hmm. And, I was 23 at the time, just turned 23. And I saw that, and I had just started my career in construction about what, this was May. So it must've been 3 months before. And I was already just like, I got to get the hell out of here. Like, this is not going to work for me. And, so I saw his post on Facebook. I messaged him and we got lunch. We started talking, ideas came and went. And the coffee idea was just like, oh, that'd be kind of cool. But basically the gist of it was him realizing that he's not good at business. He's not good at sales. He's not good at people. He's very, very introverted. All he wants to do is make food. And he was like, dude, if you can put me in a spot where all I got to do is make food, I'm a happy man. And I was like, all right, let's figure it out. So ideas came, coffee came. A couple days later, he texts me. He goes, that coffee idea, man, I love it. And I was like, all right, let's go. So we got really lucky. There was a coffee fest in Denver that happens about once a year, but it happens in different cities all over the country. So we got really lucky that there was one happening in Denver 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later that we could go to. And the one before that was in Denver was probably like 4 years before.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, yeah, it was like perfect timing. And so he went, we got the ball rolling. We met some guys that actually rent out their roaster. So we just rent the roaster from them for the hour, 2 hours, 3 hours a week that we use it. That keeps our costs down. So wow. That was really like the reason we were able to hit the ground. Otherwise it would never have been feasible.
Awesome, man. So what other ideas did you have initially besides a coffee company? Were there other things that you had in mind and then you were like, okay, we'll go with that one?
Yeah, there was a couple. I don't remember now, but basically the gist of it was his like cooking, mm-hmm. right? Just kind of having a like a business manager and stuff like that. That was the big one that stuck in my mind. Food truck came and food truck went really quick. That was not going to stick around.
Yeah.
It's so saturated out here.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. It's not very common here.
Really?
No, not at all.
They're everywhere in Denver, dude.
All right. That's interesting.
I think like 90% of them fail in the first year or two. Like they don't do well.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough, man. So why coffee?
It was something that he figured he could learn pretty quick. I like it. I've always liked it. When I was growing up, my dad always told me that I couldn't drink coffee until I was old enough to like it black. So I eventually kind of like developed an affinity for it. And then, dated a girl in college who was a barista and she kind of showed me like what good coffee is. And then like, just kind of through that and then trying it more and more and more and eventually really liked it. So just kind of felt natural.
No, that's fair enough, man. So let's take it back, man. I want to find out a little bit more about the man behind the brand. So whereabouts are you from? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in St. Louis. I live in Denver now. I came out here to go to school. Came out here to play lacrosse on the CU team, or University of Colorado. And then about 2 years, 2.5 years into that, so I left. It's a spring sport. So I left after the fall, like training season, fall ball. Mm-hmm. So I played two full seasons, then I left after the next fall. So 2.5 years on the team. And when I left, it was because I just kind of knew that it wasn't going to work out long-term. Like I didn't want to do it anymore, but I made a deal with myself that if I were to leave the team, it wasn't because I was too hard. It was because I just didn't want to do it. So I picked up jiu-jitsu and started doing that. And I kind of made a deal that like that first semester, I would put as much time into that as I would have into lacrosse.
Okay.
And so I was doing 2-a-days, like I was practicing, I was in the gym at least 10 times a week.
Wow.
And I absolutely fell in love with it. And so that's kind of eventually blossomed into Ground Shark because my business partner is one of my coaches. And that's where the name comes from too, because jiu-jitsu is a grappling sport or mm-hmm. grappling art. It's a kind of an old joke in the jiu-jitsu world that the ground is my ocean. I am the shark. And most people don't even know how to swim. And I think I forget who said it. It's kind of attributed to a bunch of people, but basically one of the big names in the sport. So that was a big moment for me leaving the lacrosse team. Cause that was still part of the pipe dream that I had had growing up. College.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say that's what you wanted to do professionally initially, or?
No, it wasn't even that I wanted to do it professionally. I started too late to do it professionally.
Okay.
But what it was like, part of the prescribed life for me anyway. Like, I fell in love with the sport. I was going to do engineering because that's what I grew up doing. My dad was an electrical engineer. My mom was an interior designer. So I kind of mixed the two and came up with civil engineering. I was going to be an engineer. I played lacrosse. Like, it was like all like for me set in stone. And this was the first decision I made where my parents were like, what are you doing? Don't do that. I was like, I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah. So that's last year, you mean, with starting the ground truck?
No. Wait. No, I meant leaving the lacrosse team.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, no, that's my bad. I guess I did. Okay. I kind of jumped around. No, so that was the first decision. And that kind of put me on the track of like actually finally trusting myself and making the decisions that I knew I had to make, which eventually led to Ground Shark, which was the first, like, I guess, really big decision made that was totally on my own.
Awesome, man. So you're doing Ground Shark full time now, is that right?
Yeah, you could say that. I left my day job March 29th. So looking at my calendar,
okay,
3.5 weeks ago.
Okay, so this is well timed.
Yeah, no, it is. And so I left my day job then, and I actually, the reason I was able to leave my day job was because it's funny how it all ties together. I actually got concussed at the end of January. I was training for a Muay Thai fight. I got kicked in the head, knocked out, and it just rocked my world. Mm. And I'd heard of CBD, you know, the hemp derivative. So I'd heard of it. I had never tried it. I'd always been kind of a cynic. And then after my concussion, all my teammates were like, dude, try out CBD. It was amazing for my head. Like, when I was recovering, it helped me just get myself back and like find some clarity. So eventually I tried it, and it was like night and day. Like, one day I felt hungover. I tried it that night, used it again the next morning. And the next day I actually felt like I could live.
Wow.
And so I wound up about a week later meeting the owner of a startup CBD company. And I started telling him my story. We started talking about it. One thing led to another. And now I'm, I guess I don't really know quite what my official title is going to be yet, but I'm one of the sales reps, and it's a totally commission-based job. And I'm also going to be doing marketing and website work for them. So it's very freelance. I don't view it as a standard 9-to-5 because it's really like however much I put in is how much I'm getting out. Mm. But that was really what came across my plate that was like, oh, I can do this. I don't need a job, and I don't need my standard career path. I can make the shift and actually keep paying the bills.
Yeah.
So that was big.
That's awesome, man. And how's that transition been for you? I mean, it's been just a couple of weeks. So yeah,
it's so much fun. I mean, I still make it a point to wake up at 7 o'clock every day. My morning is my most productive time. I can't, like right now, like I haven't eaten yet because I knew it's 1:30 my time. If I had eaten before this, I knew I'd be food combing and I'd just be a zombie on this. So I was like, purposely wait. But like, my morning is so much more productive than my afternoon that I stopped eating breakfast, and that's how I wound up getting into intermittent fasting.
Good man.
Yeah, because it was like after I eat, I just food coma and I don't do anything.
Yeah, no, I've done IF straight for about 12 years now.
Nice. Yeah. Wow. You came before, in real early.
Before it was so mainstream.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I guess right now I'm at like 3.5 years, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So before it exploded, but definitely not the hipster mover.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I was on that one early. I was on that early.
Yeah,
I gave it a try when I was doing a cut. I'd done like, I mean, I've been lifting for half my life now, but I'd done the standard thing of trying to eat like every 2 to 3 hours, eating little meals, and on a diet, it just made me hungry all the time. Just made me hungry all the time. And I don't know, I was browsing online or something. I came across the holy grail of intermittent fasting, of course, Martin Burkhan and his leangains.com website.
Yeah,
I think he might do things a little differently now, but I saw it like in its early on, and I was like, this goes against a lot of the kind of bodybuilding dogma that I've seen out there, but it seems that was like, you know what, let me try this thing for a week. So
yeah,
I tried it for like a week, and I was like, okay, like I'm not hungry. Like I can eat, because I like decent sized meals. You know, if I'm eating a meal, inverted commas, that's 400 calories, I'm like, that's not a meal.
That's not
like
a meal.
So it's a little snack. And then I was like, okay, cool. Like I can
eat
snack
like a best. It's like,
yeah,
Like you accidentally ate it.
Yeah, it's just like, okay. And then I tried it and I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to have like 1,200 calories for breakfast, like a big breakfast. And I was like, okay, cool. Oh, I can do this. And then like come dinner, I was like, I wasn't even hungry. I was like, okay, like, you know, I was having like big breakfast, big lunch, like medium sized dinner. And then like, okay, cool. And then of course I was doing like, I think I started with the 16 hour fasting and I was like, okay, cool. I mean, I got to some points when I was doing like 20 hours a day and then just like 4 hour eating window, just having two big meals. But yeah, no, it's just, for me, it's largely convenience, to be honest with you. It's
dude, for real.
Yeah. Sometimes if I'm traveling or if I'm touring or something, and everything kind of goes out the window, cause you got to just eat when you can eat or whatever. But no, typically it's kind of like 11 till 6, 11 till 7, something like that. Just, yeah, it works really well for me, man. And I think it, yeah, I don't know. It's just easy.
No, for real. Like, for me, it was literally like I realized, so I had a semester in college. I don't know how it works over in the UK, but here we go by credit hours. And I had a semester with 18 credit hours, which was like a full load. And a lot of that was just, all of it was engineering except for one architecture class. It was an architecture studio. And the studios are well known for being about twice as much work as any other class that's that amount of time. Okay. And so I was just slammed. And I had Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I didn't have class until noon, or no, until one. And I realized that when I wake up, I had to wake up at like 8 o'clock all the other days, but like when I would still wake up early on those days. And I realized that those couple hours that I had were my most productive times of the week, those 3 days. And, cause Saturday, Sunday I was hungover. So it was like those 3 days, I was like, those are the best days to work. So I realized then that like, if I ate, that was wasting those that time. And then I would food coma and then I wouldn't use the time after it. So I just kind of naturally found intermittent fasting that way, where I was like, this is what I'm doing. And then I found that and I was like, oh, I got a name for it now. Mm-hmm. Like, and it was such a big realization for me that energy management is so important, like so much more so than time management almost.
Yeah, man. It's I'm trying to work on both of those things right now. Slammed is a good word. People don't use that here in the UK. I might start using that.
I like that word. I use it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I want to come back a little bit to Ground Shark Coffee. So it's funny. I'm not a coffee drinker. I can't drink coffee.
So, yeah. Like, none of you guys can, huh?
Dude, I'm terrible. Like I've probably drunk two cups of coffee in my life. Like when I was a kid, I used to try it and I didn't like it. Coffee and beer, I never liked either of them. And my parents would always be like, oh, wait until you're, you know, yeah. when I was 10, it was like, wait until you're 16. When I was 16, it was like, wait until you're 20. It was 20. I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to like this stuff. But, yeah, no, it's funny. Cause I like caffeine. I don't drink or take a lot of it, but like, it's one of those things, like I kind of, in a way I wish I liked it because I like the caffeine buzz, but maybe I haven't tried the right thing. I haven't tried Ground Shark yet. Maybe it'll change my life.
If we ever get it over there to the UK, make shipping cheaper. Something we're struggling with, man.
Oh dude, shipping costs can be huge.
Unbelievably a pain.
Yeah.
Very bad.
So what I'd like to go into, I like to get into detail on the podcast, especially because I know some people listening to this might be thinking of starting their own business or doing what you've done, going their own way, creating, you know, going against the grain, creating something a little bit different, doing something entrepreneurial. So can you like talk us through the actual steps that it took for you to go from point A to where you are now?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So it started out, let's do the timeline. Let's see. So last May was when we had the idea. Mm-hmm. So almost a year ago, we started hitting the ground and just started doing things. We just did anything we could. We bought this little 1 pound home roaster that was, we thought maybe could work, and it can't work. But we started doing things. We bought that. We got a bunch of tests. We call green coffee, because it's green, unroasted coffee. We got a bunch of like just different things we could do to just start getting into it and like figuring it out. We met those guys we could rent the roaster from. Then we started getting a little bit more professional. They were huge as mentors because they walked us through what would and wouldn't work, what they've done, what they messed up, what worked for them, like the whole nine. They've just been amazing for us. Mm-hmm. And I think you could say we got lucky when we met them, but in reality, it was one of those things we hit the ground and started moving, and it was inevitable that we would meet someone like that. Mm-hmm. So we met them. That was a huge help. We started getting the product created. We started testing. We found some beans that we liked. We found some roasts that we liked. We figured it out. And we set a timeline, August 18th, 18, because it was a little bit of a stretch to force us to make it. And it was a good date. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So we picked that. The marketing aspect of it was, for me, targeting people who had followings. I knew that with our limited capital, because we didn't take out any loans. There's no investors. This is all coming out of our day jobs.
Yep.
Because of that, I knew that the marketing would have to come from a social media standpoint, where I would build my personal brand and the business brand, and you bump the two off of each other simultaneously.
Yeah. Did you already have any kind of following at this point already?
Minor. Okay. I had a Twitter, maybe 20 followers. I never used it, just for like reading other people's stuff. And then my Instagram was mostly just my friends.
Okay.
But I had been working on photography, actually, that the girl I was dating at the time really got me into. And so that was starting to bump up. And
is this the one who was, is this the girl who was also a barista, or?
No. That was the one before.
Oh, and I see what you're doing, Nick. I see.
Yeah. Take a little bit.
What skill do I want to learn next?
Yeah, right? Oh my God.
Yeah, no, carry on.
But, it's funny how that works, man, right? Like you get so close to somebody, and like you just pick up something that they do, and like you don't even think about it. And then later you look back and you're like, oh man, that was definitely her. But no, and then Maddie, the girl I was dating at the time, she actually really got me into, like, kind of added more to the coffee, because she actually lived in Portland for a couple of months. So there's like the coffee up in Portland is amazing. And so anyway, I knew the marketing was going to have to be social media. Okay. And I didn't have the money to pay for ads. I didn't have the money to pay for a great marketer or anything like that. And so I started targeting people that had big followings. So like people in this little corner of Twitter, Hunter Drew was a huge one. Mm-hmm. And he tweeted one day, because I came out with the coffee right around the same time as Ivan Throne came out with his cigars and Kyle Trouble came out with his olive oil. So Hunter tweeted basically like, I can't wait to be eating a steak cooked in Kyle's olive oil while I'm smoking one of Ivan's cigars. And I was like, you're going to be drinking my coffee too. Okay. I just like commented on it and he hit me back and he goes, this is yours. And I was like, yep. He goes, I'm going to buy it. And if it's good, everyone's going to know. And if it's bad, everyone's going to know. And I was like, that's exactly what I want you to do.
Okay.
And so that's a very like specific example that I saw an opportunity and jumped on. But I think the applicable lesson there is just like, find your target market, find what you're like, where you want to go. And just like, find the people that if you sway them, you effectively sway more than them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so like our target market, and as we're evolving and growing, we're getting more and more targeted towards that. Our targeted market is jujitsu athletes and MMA fighters. My business partner, he's been in the game for 13 years. So he knows a bunch of people. So we're using his connections to actually go after like big names in the fighting world and in the jujitsu world. And finding a way to make it beneficial for them to market our product. And that's been a fun puzzle to solve, trying to find like people who normally you would have no reason to talk to, or they would have no reason to talk to you rather.
Yeah.
And trying to find a way to give them a reason to talk to you and kind of grow together.
Yeah. Well, I think one interesting thing about, I'm a full-time independent musician, you know, I've been making music for over 10 years. I've been doing it professionally now for about 7.5 years. and obviously doing things 100. This is one thing people, a lot of people don't actually realize this. Maybe I need to emphasize it more now, now that more people know me, is that I'm like 100% independent. Like, I think because I've got a lot, I've got a pretty large following or whatever. So I think a lot of people think, oh, they automatically assume I'm with some label or whatever, or someone's doing stuff for me. I'm like, no, this whole thing I've built, like nobody else has really touched this thing.
That's awesome.
Thanks, man. Thank you. But it's like, because of that, you've got to be, you know, if you don't have that investment or, you know, a ton of money or like a major mentor or something like that, it makes you more creative, you know, in terms of marketing anything, in terms of getting your name out there. It's like, you've just got to think really creatively. I think one of the downsides of, you know, when companies or individuals get a ton of money up front is they don't have to, if you get tons of money, people just throw money at things. You don't really think of like, okay, what's going to be effective or how can we get creative? Okay, we've only got $500 to do some marketing, right? So what can we do with $500 that's going to make an impact? Whereas if you've just got like 50,000 to throw at stuff, you'd just be like, yeah, just like run like a billion Facebook ads. Oh yeah, get that billboard in the town. Yeah, just, you know, you can just kind of burn through this thing and you don't know what's working and what's not working. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's good to, you described it as putting a puzzle together. And I think that's where a lot of the fun is.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
It's like every couple of weeks, I'll change all the copy on the website. I'll change the photos. I'll change different call to action and stuff like that. That's what I was working on today. And it's like, every time I change it, we either get a little bit more or we get a little bit less. And I'm like, all right, change it again. Like, and just keep refining what works and finding more. And it's so tedious sometimes, but it's so rewarding.
Yeah.
So it's like, you get creative, you go off the wall, dude, your deadlift video. Like, that was like perfect, right? Like, you nailed that. And then you wound up like, right? Like, Joe Rogan talked about you on his podcast, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like, that's huge.
Yeah.
And it's like, that has nothing, objectively nothing to do with your music.
No.
But it put you on the map somewhere that you never, probably never expected to go.
I did not expect it to go that far, man. I thought, my audience, a couple of thousand people on my audience will probably find this kind of funny. But I wasn't expecting it to become an international sensation. Dude, I was in the airport a couple of weeks ago. I was at Gatwick Airport in London, and I was in an elevator, and the guy on it was kind of like, he was kind of looking at me like, you know me. He's like, you're that guy who broke the women's deadlift record. This is like a 50-year-old guy, you know.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, yeah. I saw that on the news, and I was just like, wow. He's like, yeah,
dude,
yeah, it was very
awesome.
Funny. It was very, very funny. Yeah. And I was just like, wow, that's so funny, man. Like, of all the things to get known for, but the timing was good because obviously I've got a whole body and library of work that already exists. So a lot of people, if I go on my YouTube channel now on my music videos, one of the most popular comments is, "I came for the deadlift, I stayed for the music." So it's like a lot of people discovered me through that thing, but then after that, they started listening to the podcast or they downloaded my album or whatever. So it's been when these weird things happen, you've got to just take them and run with them. You can't plan everything.
Exactly. You just gotta, it's kind of like throwing darts at the wall and seeing what sticks, but it's a little bit more scientific than that. Just a little bit, but like, you have an idea, like it's you, right? Yeah. That's kind of why it works. It's like, you thought that'd be funny. You're like, this is hilarious. I'm going to try this. Like, maybe other people will think it's funny too, but it's like your sense of humor. Right. Yeah. And like, I think that's what makes so many big box brands and like big retail stores and everything. Like, that's what makes them impersonal. And I think that the internet as a whole is bringing us back to, kind of like a farmer's market, right? It's like a big international online farmer's market where guys like me can get our coffee out there to the world. And like, my potential audience is millions and millions of people. And like, even 20 years ago, my potential audience would be whoever lives in Denver, you know? And it's kind of the same thing with your music. And it's really cool to see.
Real Talk with Zuby is sponsored by Gumroad.com. Gumroad is a platform that makes it really, really easy for creators of all kinds to sell their products, both digital and physical. It's what I've been using for my latest book, Strong Advice, Zuby's Guide to Fitness for Everybody. Gumroad makes it really quick, seamless, intuitive, and easy to sell whatever it is that you want. You can get started in just a few minutes by going to gumroad.com, signing up as a creator, and setting up your product. Did I mention that it's free to use? It makes it really quick and easy for you to set up and sell your products and get paid every single week, and it also makes it really easy for buyers to pay you with credit card, debit card, PayPal, various payment methods. It works well on mobile as well as on desktop. So I highly recommend you go check them out, whether you are an artist, a podcaster, a creator, a musician, whatever it is that you do, check out gumroad.com, that is G-U-M-R-O-A-D.com, and get started today, gumroad.com. So at the moment, are you only selling online at the moment, or do you have any real world retail as well?
All online at the moment. Okay. Looking for more business to business sales. I had kind of written it off a little bit. Like, I really want to get it straight to the consumer. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten a couple sales to businesses that have just been awesome. I'm like, all right, I need more of those. Like, that's what's going to pay the bills.
Yeah.
And it's another one of those things, right? It gets our coffee in front of eyes that we would never see. Something I've been doing lately that I've been pushing. We did it for Easter Seals first off, and Easter Seals is it's like a special needs care community. So they have daycare, they give them jobs and like the whole nine for like special needs people. It's a really awesome, very well-run organization. Mm-hmm. And my day job was managing a construction site. I was a field engineer. And so my field office was actually we were renting office space from an Easter Seals building. And I wound up talking a lot to the guy who was in the office next to me. And he had been an entrepreneur his whole life, and he was working for Easter Seals, actually pretty high up in the organization, as basically his retirement job.
Okay.
And so he kind of became a mentor for me. And actually, I need to call him. It's been a couple of weeks since I've talked to him. But he asked me one day, he's like, would you guys be willing to put our logo on some coffee? And I kind of thought about it, and I didn't really process it right. And I went, how much coffee are you thinking? He's like, I don't know, 50, 100 bags. I was like, oh, yeah, we can do that. So got to talking. We redesigned our label for him. We put their logo on the front, their mission statement, like the whole nine. And we basically just put our logo on just in the corner in the back. It said, this coffee is made, produced, distributed specifically for our friends by Ground Shark Coffee. And it was really cool. And I started thinking about that more. And I was like, man, like that's kind of one of those things that like, it's not a standard marketing tactic that you would see written all over the world, but like, it's very effective in just getting your coffee in front of people that would never find it.
Sure.
And so now I've gotten another one of those since. We're looking at a couple more. We got a couple like really good leads that we're working with to try to get it for another couple people. So hopefully that pans out a little bit more.
Awesome, man. So what's your daily schedule looking like now, if you have one?
Yeah, I'm looking at my routine on the wall. I just bought this like massive whiteboard sticker that just sticks on the wall.
Oh yeah.
And like now everything is written on it and I love it. But my daily schedule, I wake up at 7, kind of make some coffee, wake up. I just started doing the Wim Hof breathing. Okay. You ever tried that?
You know I haven't. I've heard of Wim Hof and I've heard of Wim Hof breathing, but I've never tried it. I don't know what it technically is.
So you basically force yourself to hyperventilate, then you hold your breath for about as long as you can, and then you take in a huge breath and hold that for a while. Then you do that 3 times. Okay. And that's like grossly oversimplified, but that's effectively what it is. And I did it yesterday for the first time. Then today, my hands and my feet went numb. And when I was done, I felt absolutely amazing. So I'm like, all right, well, I got to try this more. But yeah, so like my morning routine, wake up, do that, have some coffee. And then I write out a daily email that I've been doing lately, and then spend the next 4 or 5 hours doing the like creative work that we need done.
Okay.
So copy, photo editing, reaching out to like sales leads, everything like that. All the like mentally demanding stuff I try to get done in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then I'll break my fast around noon. The evening or the afternoon is like kind of my nonsense time. I usually take a nap. If I have like tedious stuff to do, I'll take care of that. Like going to the store, doing chores around the house. That's when I try to do that. Cause I just am not thinking as clearly as I am in the morning. Mm-hmm. Once the food coma and everything wears off, My whole routine just changed. After that, I'll start getting a little bit more work done. My roommate gets home from work, hang out with him a little bit, eat dinner. And then after dinner, I'll take another hour or two to get like the kind of less creative work done. Mm-hmm. So it's a good work day that kind of fits around my energy level more than it fits around my time. And usually I like to train at like 11 and then right before I eat, but I broke my rib about 3 weeks ago and right after I left my job. And jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
It was just, he was trying to flatten me out and like pushing all his weight on it. And I was not letting it. And it just, I heard it crack. It's the worst one I've ever had. And this is like my fourth or fifth one.
Really?
And it's like, it still hurts to take a deep breath like 3 weeks later.
Jeez, man. That's why I don't fight people.
That's why I probably shouldn't.
That's what I did. I did play rugby for like
10 years.
No, I didn't. No. My ears are all good. No good cauliflower ears for me, dude, man. It's generally the second rows that get them in the.
Oh yeah,
it's one of the positions. I don't know how much you know about rugby.
A little bit.
Yeah, it's the guys who are in the second row, and occasionally a guy called the number eight that tends to get that because they spend so much time with their heads, literally pretty much between like two other guys' butts.
Oh, so the second row. So like in the scrum.
In the scrum, exactly.
The second row is usually who gets it, not the front row.
No, not the front row, because the second rows go. So you've got the three guys at the front. You've got the guy called in the middle is called the hooker, which people like to joke about. And then you've got the props on either side. Okay. And then so it's like 3-2-1. So you've got the props and hookers at the front. Then the second rows, two of them, and they go in between those three. And then you've got the number eight at the back who goes in between
everyone. He's the one that gets the ball, right?
Yeah. So it's those three. Well, the guy who normally gets the ball is called the scrum half. So he's the guy behind the number eight.
Okay.
So the guys in the scrum are called the pack. So like you've got eight people. You've also got the flankers who are on the side. So you've got like the 3-2-1, and then you've got the two guys on the side. And then you've got so a rugby team is split into the front. Into the forwards and the backs. So the forwards, there's eight of them. Those are the guys in the scrum. And then the other seven players, those are the guys who kind of like line up, you know, when the ball comes out the scrum and they pass it down. So, those guys certainly don't get the ears. But it's the second rows and the number eight who I've seen some pretty, I've seen some pretty serious.
I used to hang out with the rugby team at CU and there are some of them that was like, wow, like worse than the fighters I know, a lot of them.
Yeah, it's because they're just constant, like rubbing. Yeah,
the same deal. I got mine when I was still a white belt and I had no choice but to keep training.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I've only been training for a year. I still don't know nothing about fighting.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, well, if I stop now, I just look like I can, but I can't. I have no choice. I have to keep going.
Yeah, man. So what got you into fighting?
I had never been in a fight before and I felt like I should. It was literally that simple.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's an interesting mindset. I think most guys are like, if they've never been in a fight, they're like, okay, well, let me try to keep things that way. Let me not go seek it out.
Yeah, man. I just heard like so many people say like, you don't know who you are until you get punched in the mouth. Just any kind of variation of that. And eventually I was like, you know what? Like, I've never been in a fight. I've had punches thrown at me and it's never like evolved into anything. And I'm just like, you know what? I should figure that out. And honestly, man, it was the best decision I've ever made in my life. Just like becoming comfortable with violence changed everything about the way I view social interaction, which was interesting. Didn't expect it. I'm calmer, very calm. Like have you seen the movie Fight Club?
I have, but not for a long time. So
there's there's a scene in there where he's getting yelled at by his boss. And then he cuts away and narrates. And he's basically saying after Fight Club, everything in the rest of my life just gets the volume turned down.
Okay. Like
it's hard to care when your boss is yelling at you when you just got punched in the mouth last night. Right. Mm-hmm. Or choked out or whatever. And it's very accurate. You know, it's like I'm just kind of across the board calmer. Like people start getting all feisty and everything when I'm at the bar and I just like, come on, dude, stop it. You almost avoid fights by just being so calm about the concept of fighting that it throws people off and they're like, what? What's going on? And they back off.
That's interesting, man. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm obviously like really into physical activity with all my training and lifting and stuff, but I've never actually like gotten into a combat sport. Like I've tried a whole ton of sports, but I've never done any like boxing or jujitsu or anything like What's that?
You'd probably really enjoy it.
Yeah. I probably would. I think I probably will at some point. Yeah. You know what I mean? When I've achieved certain goals and aspirations that are
right.
A lot more life crucial for me to achieve.
No, definitely.
And I've got some, you know, a little bit of spare capacity and it's like, let me take on something new. I like to try something new every couple of years, you know, in 2014 and 2015, it was all about language learning. You know, I like,
nice,
you know, picked up French and Spanish and did like a German course as well. Mm-hmm. French and Spanish have, you know, to be honest, with both of those languages, within about 8 weeks, I can get like really pretty good at either of those languages again. Like I always remember the basics. If I meet a French person tomorrow, I can still have a conversation with them or whatever. But right. It's not as fresh as it was because you got to keep, for it to stay there, you got to keep using it. Dude. And just recently this year, I haven't been meeting a lot of French and Spanish speakers, so I haven't really been using it. And I'm not going out of my way specifically to
right.
like do a lot of it. But I think it's good to pick up new skills every year or so.
Dude, definitely. I actually took 4 years of German back in high school.
Oh yeah,
and have not used it since. It's gone.
Yeah. Yeah,
I could probably get it back, but it's gone.
Yeah, German is tough as well. And then if you go to Germany, like I've been to Germany several times, and if you go to Germany, so many people speak such good English that it tends to default into English. So even if you want to speak German, their English is probably going to be way better than your German. So it defaults back. Whereas in France and Spain, a lot of French people and Spanish people don't speak good English. So in a way, it's better because it's like, okay, well, if we're going to converse, my French is better than your English, so we're going to stick with French, and it's kind of better from that perspective. Yeah, because then you can actually practice.
Yeah, I've gone down to Rio, and I really should have known a little bit more Portuguese than I did.
Oh yeah,
and then Belize, I was actually there last week. That was all English speaking, and then a couple times I've been in Mexico, it's all Spanish. And then working on the construction site, you'd think that I should have thought ahead back in high school and learned Spanish because we have so many Latino workers, but no, there's a lot of Spanish
in
my world.
You got plenty of time, man. If you want to pick any of those up, man, bye.
Yeah. Got too much going on as it is, but yeah, I need to, you know,
yeah,
it opens your world up.
It really does. It really does. I didn't realize, I've always thought languages are important, especially, I think this is one thing as well, you know, being, obviously the UK is geographically a little detached from the rest of Europe being an island, mm-hmm. but I think in Europe in general, because you've got so many different cultures, so many different countries and so many different languages in a relatively small space. So like all of Europe, excluding Russia, is smaller than the US, right?
Right.
So, but within Europe, you've got, I don't know, 40, 50 completely different languages in that same geographical space.
Even Spain has like three different, totally different dialects of Spanish, right? Like very different.
Yeah. Well, in Barcelona, they speak more Catalan, which is not even Spanish. That's a different language.
That's
they
my
do,
point.
Yeah. They do speak Spanish as well. And then in the north, around, what's the name of that place? Is it Andalusia? They've got another language that they speak. I can't remember this is going to annoy me now. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my brain, but they've got another language there.
Yeah.
But, so it's really, really interesting because you've just got all these different languages and, you know, anytime I go to a country, I can probably at least say like, hello, thank you, and goodbye. And like, I don't know, ten or 15 different languages. Cause even just knowing those little bits, it's cool. Like if you're there or if you're in Serbia or in Czech Republic or in Lithuania, even if you just say like a couple of words, people are just like, their minds are just blown. They're like, oh, wow. You know, like,
yeah, dude, it just takes a little bit, a little bit. And then like, I've talked to a couple of German people recently and I've been like, I've just said like a couple sentences and they're like, oh, you know German? And then I've gone right back to English. I've been like, nope, I know that. Like, I know enough to make an impression. That's it. Yeah, all I got.
Yeah, it's really funny, man. But it's always fun. It's just like, I like to see people's eyes light up. Like in the UK, obviously you've got a big Polish population. So I know literally like 6 or 7 phrases in Polish. Yeah. But it's just so funny, like, because nobody expects a black guy to know any Polish, right? So if you just say like anything, they're just like, you know, their faces just like light up. So
yeah,
it's really, really funny. Same with like Lithuanian, Croatian, Serbian. I've been to all those countries. So it's like, okay, let me at least learn like, thank you, hello, goodbye, what's your name? And maybe like, my name is Zubi, you know, just like some really basic, really basic phrases, but they get you a long way.
They really do.
Yeah. So what's next, bro? You've taken this big leap to go full time now with your new company. And I can see you're obviously an ambitious dude. So what is the what's the future for Ground Shark Coffee? Where do you see it going?
That's a big question. My dream with Ground Shark, my business partner wants to sell me his half once we get it big enough and use it to buy a sailboat and just go live out the sailboat, sail the world, then just go do his own thing for the rest of his life.
Nice.
Yeah. And that is awesome. What I would like to do with it at that point is keep growing it and hire it off as much as I can and just be very hands off with it. Mm-hmm. That being said, it's become my baby and now I don't know if I'll ever be able to do that, but I need to. That's like the curse of the entrepreneur, right?
Yeah.
I'd imagine it's probably pretty close to how parents feel when their kids grow up and move off to college. And it's like, all right, time to go. But that's the dream with Ground Shark, right? Build it up, make it something I'm very proud of, and then start hiring it off. Maybe sell it if the price is right. I don't know. And then start working on something else. And I love the chaos and the just nonsense of the startup world, right? Like just every time I turn around, there's more just weirdness going on. And I love that. It's exciting. It makes me feel alive, right? So yeah. I want to keep doing that as long as I can and keep working on other projects. And really, I like getting my hands in a lot of different things. And I want to take Ground Shark a little bit more vertical. I'd like to have a coffee shop at some point. I'd like to own parts of coffee farms, maybe in Brazil, maybe in other countries. And just have like a little bit of the whole supply chain start to finish.
Mm. Where's the coffee source from at the moment?
Right now, all Brazil, but okay. We've got some Indonesian on the way. We've got a couple other countries we're testing. We're actually, my business partner's doing what we call a cupping, but it's effectively a taste testing tomorrow. Mm. And then he's going to bring back a couple different ones that he likes and we're going to go through them. We're working on new stuff, but right now all from Brazil. I would like to, like I said, get totally vertical with it. I'm also working on a bunch of other things. I'm starting up another podcast. We're calling it The Unemployables. I'm working with another guy who quit his job like right after I did. So I don't know where that'll go. And then what else? I'm working on rolling out like some business consultations and maybe a course with, you know, Jeff Putnam of Rugged Legacy. You might have seen him in Twitter.
Vaguely,
He's been new
from Twitter, but not like
Got you. He's a great dude, and me and him have been working a lot on like consolidating our knowledge and trying to package it to give the people. And then something I've kind of realized recently is that my like what really gets me going is connecting people to their dreams. That's how I fell into the Ground Shark role of my business partner. Like his dream is to buy the sailboat, but his really the meat of his dream is to buy that sailboat by doing what he loves.
Got it. Yeah.
You know, like he could very easily go and get a high paying job as a chef at some other restaurant, like just some job, right. That would pay the bills and eventually get him there. But to him, that's selling a part of his soul to make it happen.
Yeah.
And so it's so cool to me to like be a part of that and just connecting people with where they want to go, putting people in the right position, giving people the opportunity to make their dreams a reality, whatever that looks like, be it professional or personal. I love that. Awesome. And I've been realizing that lately. And so what I've been thinking a lot about past couple of days has actually been like, how can I monetize that and actually make a living doing that? Cause that's in reality, like that's my dream job.
Mm.
So what's next for me personally, figuring out that path, you know?
Yeah. No doubt, man. Well, we're all going to make it, man. We're all going to make it. I'm really enjoying doing this podcast because it's so cool talking to such a range of people, but you know, everyone's inspiring and fascinating in their own way, you know? So it's like,
mm-hmm.
And obviously being an entrepreneur can be lonely, man. It's sometimes you're like,
dude,
I'm the only person, feels like you're the only person doing something that's against the grain or really chasing after your own dream or passion and not just being a cog in a machine. And yeah, it's a weird mindset, but anytime I talk to an entrepreneur, I'm just like, I feel you.
I
know what you're talking from. It doesn't matter if it's music or coffee or watches or you know what I mean?
It's there's like that connection right there. And actually I didn't realize this when I quit my job. I'm such an extrovert. I never put two and two together that by quitting my job and working from home, I won't have any coworkers. Mm. Like I make sure I always talk to my roommate before he leaves for work in the morning, because that's like, I need personal interaction. But like, and then I don't see anybody or talk to anybody unless I'm on a call until he comes home for lunch, if he does. And then it's like, there's another 4 hours and I'm like, I'm alone all day. And I'm like blowing my brains out over here. Like, God, I need to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
But,
awesome, man.
Yeah. It's very good to meet other people on the same path.
100%, bro. And we will most definitely stay in touch. Mm-hmm. Hi, man. So, Nick, let people know where they can find you online and where they can find Ground Shark Coffee as well.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter is best. Instagram works too. Twitter is at Nick Lowry, NickLowry. Instagram is at NickLowry39, the number's 39. My website is NickLowry.com. You can find Ground Shark at GroundSharkCoffee.com. On Twitter at GroundSharkCC, because we couldn't fit coffee. And then on Instagram at GroundSharkCoffeeCo.
Awesome.
I think that about covers it. I think. I don't know. There's so many now.
That's all good, man. Awesome, dude. Really, really, really good to talk to you, Nick, and to
find you as well.
Out more about your story. And yeah, man, I wish you all the best with it.
You too, Zuby.
Keep killing it, man. No doubt, bro. Have a good day.
Too. Bye-bye. Yeah, you too. Bye.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the grand, stunt me is destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.